Good evening, Bodhisattvas. So as usual, when we gather like this, if my voice trails or you just can't hear me, give me a signal, please, so I can raise it for you. And I know we're keeping the hall as it is, but if you find scooching in would make it easier for you to hear, if that's needed, that's perfectly fine as well. So I've been, maybe like most of us, for a little while since seeing the title of the retreat, kind of been having a relationship with the koan. For me, it's been a kind of, I know you're there, but I'm not sure exactly where and how to work with you yet. And then finding that it pops up in strange places and says, oh, look at this now, yeah? And so tonight, I'm going to share just what's been happening for me in relation to our bodhisattvas entering the bath together. It feels like welcome to Metaphorlandia, which is a land with which we are familiar in this practice. You know, everything is like it. It's like it. It's almost, but it's not quite it. We need the metaphor. We need all of that. So, yeah, it feels great to have found a name for this territory. Metaphorlandia. It's always interesting to see, you know, where koans go, where they want to go, despite how I may have met them before and what came of the previous meetings. I can meet with them and kind of go in that same territory, rehash our conversation a little bit, but then sometimes, delightfully, something new arises. Something strange arises. Maybe that's my case in particular. Strange meeting the strange. 'Cause what happened for me a few weeks ago, I think I was driving somewhere, and just a thought of, oh, I wonder if there's anything else to happen around this koan came to mind. And I thought about bodhisattvas entering the bath together. And then I thought, I wonder if in the old days, like it says in the koan, they do like we do at community baths these days and require you to take a shower before you get in. I was like, huh, that's weird. But I was curious about that. What is that? Yeah? And then here's where it got stranger for a moment, or for a few moments. I had a memory, an image really, of this old TV show, well, old, from the 80s, a UK TV show that I used to watch at night on MTV back in those days. It's called The Young Ones. So I'm not sure if anybody here has ever seen The Young Ones, but you're about to meet them in a way. And if you look them up afterwards, you'll understand just how strange these companions are coming here to join us tonight. But a little background, that's four people living in an apartment together of, they're from very different backgrounds, represent something very different. We have Rick, who's kind of he's a new wave guy, he's politically active, challenging the system, all that kind of stuff. Marxism, he's looking into that. So he's that kind of, he's a university student, he's into that stuff. Then we have Neil, who's just a hippie. Maybe a dirty old, dirty hippie, you know, dirty, stinky hippie, peace and love, man. And, you know, he's there too. And then we have Mike, who's the straight-laced guy. And kind of has little savvy and worldly wise things and maybe business, but he's kind of that, I don't know if he'd be preppy if we'd call him that in our culture, but he's kind of that ilk. And then we have Vivian, who's the punk rocker. He's got red hair and it's spiked. He has metal spikes in his forehead. He wears leather and he's got the spikes on his, you know, his jewelry and everything. So you have these four quite different people living together, renting out an apartment and having their adventures. And that in and of itself is quite entertaining to see the mixture of them. What's more entertaining is that each of them is not very adept at their own little niche in their life. They're kind of bumbling along anyway, quite successfully maybe, because it was a great show. But the image that came to mind was bath night at the apartment. And in order to save money, they just fill up a bathtub with water and draw straws for who goes first and who goes last. So the scene opens up to Neil, our dirty hippie, going into the bath and looking, and it's just full of basically mud. He's like, oh, I hate bath night when I draw the last straw. Because he's got to get in afterward, after everybody else is cleaned. And they're like, hey, that's what you drew. You get to deal with it. So there's this muck and mire. He reaches in and pulls out a bicycle. That's how much has been cleaned before him. And then he just plops right down there in the mud and everything. So when that came to mind, I said, well, that would be the benefit of rinsing off before you get in the bath. You kind of get off all that extra stuff so that when you do get in the bath, when you're going one by one like that after each other, it'd be a little more beneficial. So coming back to our koan, the benefit is that we enter together. We're not having one after the other and leaving something behind for one another. We enter together. And so I thought, it doesn't seem right that we would need to take that shower ahead of time in the context of our practice to rinse anything off at all. We want to bring all that we are into the bath. And I thought, well, maybe by coming to retreat, that's a kind of leaving our lives behind. That's kind of maybe taking that shower, rinsing things off. But I thought, no, that's more like just taking off our clothes, taking off the clothes of the world, the clothes we wear day to day, which inherently have some of that dirt and grime and whatever we've been collecting on ourselves. It's got that in there. So it's not that we need to rinse off, it's that we get to strip down, become vulnerable, become naked. And that's what coming to retreat feels like. Stripping down, stripping away those layers, but still coming as we are. And there's that part of me that's, you know, I appreciate that we come just as we are and we bring what we bring, like in the welcome poem that David read yesterday. Welcome, all come in, please come in, all of you. Not all of you only individually, but all of you individually as a person, all that you are, come in. So looking at the koan, it's nice, and you know, the subtle touch of the water released the brightness. So here I am, having visited the young ones and their muck and mire of their bathtub. Then I'm imagining all of us showing up as we are, and the koan begins to evolve a bit. That dirty gray brown cloud of dirt releases the brightness. That little oil slick on the water from the lotions and perfumes and soapy residue that films the top of the water, that also releases the brightness. That stench, that when it hits the water, it's like, oh, and then I realize, ah, that's me. That also releases the brightness. And then if there's our wounds, our cuts, that when we hit the water, we go, ah, little bit of a sting, that also releases the brightness, reveals the brightness. And our sore and achy bodies, when they get into that warm bath, and we go, ah, that releases the brightness. So all of it together at once, making the soup of the retreat, the soup of the bath, mixing and mingling just as it is, and we welcome that, that's what releases the brightness. We might have a preference that people rinse off certain things, or we might find that somebody is doing something that strikes a nerve, pushes a button, and we'd like them maybe to rinse that off. But really, that nerve, that button being pushed and being struck, that releases the brightness. So I think we may have our preferences that arise, but I don't know that in this setting we have any requirement that anybody cleans up before they get in. So all come in, please, welcome. And it seems, you know, that's part of the retreat. That's part of what we do. So it makes it a little easier when we're all agreeing to do that. But then I considered the other side of the bath, which is each one of us, our individual bath that is ourselves, and all the beings that come into that bath at all times, but especially during a retreat. What do we require, or what do we request of them? That's where it gets a little more tricky. Those parts of ourselves where we may say, you know, I really need to clean that one up a bit before it can get into this water. Or that one, not at all. Please, I just don't think we can handle it this time. Or that one, please, you'd be good. Come to the water, come to the bath. But inherently, these things are already in our baths, our individual baths. They are there and coming forth just as they are. So just as we welcome one another, just as each of us is, might we extend that same welcome to all those within us that enter the bath of each of us? And how do we do that? How do we hold that open welcoming? I think that's something to pay attention to, notice, each of us. The welcoming of the outward and the welcoming of the inward. How do we do that? And again, it's a little more, I don't know if it's easier, but it's kind of, well, on the outward level, we're all here. We don't really have too much control over that. The conflict can be on the inner level, in the inner bath. When we have to welcome the one that we hoped wouldn't come, but there it is, up to its neck in the water. We have to welcome the one that got lost and forgot to show up. Maybe we don't have to, maybe we get to welcome that one. And we get to welcome the one that got lost and had no idea there was a treat, but fell right through the door and splashed in. And welcome the one that we so hoped would come, but never showed. How do we welcome that one in its absence? How do we open up the waters and extend the waters so that welcome, all come in, please come in, supports us and nourishes us inwardly and outwardly. Because there's a benefit to that as I see it. If we're trying to have the bath just by ourselves, inwardly or outwardly, if we're trying to control the inner situation or trying to just have our own bath, it's not as good as doing it with others, because others can help scrub our backs, reach the places that we can't, tend to the things that we may not see without their presence. Maybe even give us a massage. You know. So much better when it's the touch of another giving a massage than trying to work on it myself. Yeah. Inwardly and outwardly, when we invite all of the beings into the bath, they splash around, they play, they care for one another. They make the bath what it is. But there still seem to be these habit energies, as they're called, so habits of thought and action, maybe attitude, that arise when these things come into our bath. We can welcome those as well. No reason to get rid of them, but notice them and welcome them and say, what is this here? But no need to kick those out either. But a few particular ones came to mind for me that I recognize, and you may as well. It's kind of like name-dropping koans here in a moment that personify these habit energies. One is when somebody comes to Saoshan and says, they say everybody has it, that thing, but I'm afraid I'm too covered up with the dusts of the world and I don't have it. Saoshan raises his hand. Picture Saoshan raising his, well, that's the other, I'm going to come back to that. Maybe this one, he has a person raise his hand and hold out his fingers, and Saoshan counts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, enough. Yeah? So that habit energy that thinks it's not good enough, that it doesn't have what's needed, it's too burdened by whatever the story is. Notice if that one arises, if that one comes in. Count its fingers for it. Enough. Yeah. And then there's another, I don't know if it's the other end of the spectrum, but it tends to go in that direction. Manjushri. In the story where he comes late to the gathering and everybody's gone back to their places, except there's the Buddha and there's a young woman sitting next to the Buddha in Samadhi. So Manjushri, purveyor of wisdom, seeing this young woman breaking taboos and getting so close to the Buddha and wondering and asking, how does she get to be so close to you and I can't? So that one that shows up and what's the proper thing to do and, you know, what's the proper place for people and who belongs and who doesn't? Yeah? And he kind of gets his own sort of enough by being invited, okay, wake her out of her samadhi and let's ask her. And he can't do it until delusion comes up and says, this is how you do it, with a snap of the fingers. So if you have your Manjushri showing up, insisting on something, questioning something, maybe invite it to offer what it would like to offer and see, maybe that will help, maybe that will transform something. Or maybe invite your Manjushri to receive something from somewhere else. Manifest delusion to companion your Manjushri. Then we have a third example, which to me, it's, you can't really tell exactly what is its agenda, what is its motive. And that comes to Ching Shui, solitary and destitute. Shows up to the teacher and says, I am Ching Shui, I'm solitary and destitute, please give me alms. When we talk about this, kind of a question, does this person, Ching, really feel this way? Or is he kind of bragging in that backwards way of, I'm solitary and destitute. Give me alms, even though I don't really need them. We don't really know. Like, what is really happening here? And either way, the reply is, you know, you're saying that you are solitary and destitute and lacking, but your lips are moist with having drunk 3 cups of the finest wine in China already. So either it's, aha, I caught you. You don't need to play that game. You don't need to deny what you have. Caught you red-handed with the beautiful loot. Or it's saying, you don't have to have that story of being solitary and destitute. Lick your lips just as they are. Taste what you taste just as they are. That is it. Either way, that can be kind of a shock. Shocking out of that habit energy of, I think I've got it, but no, I don't think I've got it. Or I'm pretty sure I've got it, but I don't want to say I've got it. Just taste it. Taste your lips. Taste what you've drunk already. So when and if that one arrives, yeah, smack the lips. See what the taste is. See what the belly feels like. Welcome them as well. And notice, you know, what others arise. What other habit energies or beings or expected or unexpected beings arise from outside, from inside. Welcome them. But there's still a question, how do we welcome them? And I think that's figured out in the welcoming, in the walking of that path, in the moving forward, the act of doing it. What I've also been feeling lately, something more about how we might welcome such things, not just during the retreat, but at all times. And it goes back to the first name-dropping koan I brought in about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, enough. Encountering that koan years ago, it came across to me like the way I presented it initially, of kind of reassuring. You have enough. Just as you are is enough. Those dust-caked fingers, just fine, just enough. But recently I was looking at the Asekyezen gates, looking through there, and that koan is there. And I noticed, it caught my attention, after the enough, there's an exclamation point. I thought, wow, that's interesting. So, hold out your hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Enough! Enough doubting yourself. Enough playing that message over and over. It seemed in accordance with when Yunmen goes to see Muzhou and I'm still not clear about myself. Get out of here. Utterly useless stuff, you know. Your hands are always going to be caked in something. Stop worrying about that. Enough of it, yeah? Even if it was, hold up your hand and there's only 3. Enough. Or maybe it's a stump. You lost your hand. That's enough. Quit worrying about it. That's kind of it's a fierceness that I feel coming through in that I hadn't noticed before, and it's all because of that exclamation point. And it's not enough in the sense of you're pestering me and I don't want to hear it anymore. It's enough of limiting yourself in this way. Enough of confining yourself. Enough of doubting yourself. See that bright, shining light, released, all the time in you, just as you are. Yeah? So I was coupling that with this inclusivity of welcome, all come in, please come in. And there's been this, of late, I don't know if it's a movement, I don't know what you call it, a fad, a term, but people talk about radical inclusivity, radical inclusion. And seems like a great idea, a good thing to put into practice, especially in our day and age where we see a lot of excluding and pushing away and dividing going on. Can we be radically inclusive of ourselves, of those in our communities, of those in our world? But it doesn't seem to me to be enough just to be inclusive, radically. So I'm adding fiercely inclusive. Or fiercely welcoming. Radically inclusive, fiercely welcoming. So not just doing a radical thing by opening up the gates and letting all enter, but when those enter, let's welcome them fiercely. And by fiercely, not aggressively, but fiercely like a burning fire. I picture it with, you know, welcome things with eyes ablaze, heart-mind ablaze, body and being ablaze, meeting them right there. Welcoming them in as they are, but showing up as you are as well, fully, solidly, ablaze. And it's not like a fire that's running out of control and raging, nor is it one that's held too tightly. It's kind of steadily, solidly burning, strongly. So it's not extending out to the world too far and trying to make things any particular way, nor is it retreating too much into itself, hoping to call things to it to come gather around its fire. It's resting right in its own place, fiercely welcoming what comes. And it seems to me, when we welcome things in that way, we welcome them with eyes and heart, mind, body, and being ablaze. We extend an invitation for them to find their own fire, to meet us with their fierceness. By us offering it to them, they can return it to us. Then it becomes brightness, meeting brightness, releasing brightness, all ablaze. How do we do that? Well, that's the other question. You know, keep living into that. How might we do that? How might we offer that to the world? And sometimes it's by noticing what we might do that dampens our fire or holds it back or minimizes it. Or we might notice it by when we let ourselves burn too bright and out of control, and then there's pain on both sides. If it was easy, it might not be worth the try. Yeah. But there seems something essential about it to me. And this last bit, it's funny to me, and some of you have heard in other talks I've given, this came to me while I was mowing the lawn. And that's kind of funny. Didn't take anything other than to mow the, well, it's not a lawn, it's a yard. I make that clarification because that's not a lawn. But there I am pushing through the weeds and the grasses and stuff. And it's like mowing the lawn ablaze. Watch out, there's a ladybug. Don't get it. Ablaze. I was successful this time in dodging one. Well, one. Like, it made a difference to that one. Yeah. So this might connect with another koan name dropping of the two friends mending together. And one says, "What are you doing?" "Oh, I'm mending clothes." "How is it mending?" "One stitch is just like the next. We've been traveling together for 20 years, practicing, and you can say something like that still?" "Well, how do you mend?" "I stitch as if the whole world were on fire." In one way that can bring, the world's on fire, there's an urgency, I must do something now because the world is a world on fire. But it could also be the world is ablaze. The brightness of the world is shining and burning right here and now. I want to meet it with my blazing, with my brightness. And again, brightness meeting brightness, releasing the brightness. And fortunately, it's not something we do alone. You look around this room. The 16 plus bodhisattva fires burning, meeting one another, light to light, releasing the brightness that comes through those meetings. And then look within to the 16 bodhisattvas in your pool, in your bath. 16 plus. Mixing and mingling, meeting one another. Light shining onto light, releasing the light. Where it's both 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Enough. And enough. You don't have to choose one of those. Those meet each other and release the brightness. That seems like a good stopping point.
There's the brightness.
Yeah. So yeah, thanks. And
Andrew?
Yeah.
Can I say something?
Yes.
The image I got, you know that Japanese artist Mayumi Oda?
Yes.
Well, I got this image of all these 16 kind of plump.
Mm-hmm.
Bodhisattvas, male and female, splashing and playing. Who was it that said we need more play? Yesterday someone said we need more play. Anyway, it was a very vivid, alive image of a life between them.
Hmm. Yeah. Brightness releasing in the splashes.
Yeah, you know, water pouring off each other's backs, and just all kinds of playful stuff, which you don't usually think about with bodhisattvas.
Oh. I don't know about that.
Well, I
Fortunately, you're here to help them.
That's right.
I keep thinking of them that way.
She is trying to get us all in the shower together.
No, I mean, that was another example. Or in the pond.
Yeah, well, the heavens may be colluding with you to bring it down from above.
It's coming.
Yeah.
I have a question. So what's the definition of fat in English? Sorry, English is not my first language, so.
Oh. It has multiple, like English does, you know. A bath, as in your bathtub. I am taking a bath, a solitary endeavor. Or we're going to the community bath, where it's the steam room or something, where everybody goes together. I don't know. Any others come to mind for people? Those are the two main ones I think of.
Because I have an image when you were talking about the bath, and the image come to me was like, how about people in India, mm-hmm. they bath in the river.
Right. Yeah, it's like that kind of bath is made by the bathing. Yeah? It's just a river until we get in it, and then it becomes a bath. Mm-hmm. This is just a yurt, maybe, until we got in it, and now it's a bath. It looks like one of those backdoor or outdoor backyard baths. I was thinking about that today. I never swum in one of those, but like, oh, just open up the top and it rains and we have a bath for sure. I'm sorry, Singh, was there more you wanted to say?
Well, it's just something come up like, yes, a touch and it's release of light. But just like the TV show you talk about, then the person when the last one went into is like a monk. So like in some way, I mean, I was thinking of myself, if I go to India, I would jump into that river. It's kind of very romantic to think, yeah, I bath together with them. But mm-hmm. honestly, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. The river is quite dirty. Mm-hmm. So people bath together.
Yeah.
We might even take the dirt from each other.
Yeah.
And it might be bright. It might not.
Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking of, in India, that same river may be where a corpse is offered.
What?
A corpse? Dead body?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cremated on the river or offered to the water? Mm-hmm. The same one in which people are bathing. So talk about welcome. All come in. Please come in. Yeah?
Yeah, so in some way, like, well, I think they... In India, most of them went to the river to bath if they have no choice.
Yeah.
I think the rich one won't go there. In some way, I think in modern society, since we have so many things, we can't separate ourselves from each other. Maybe we are missing something.
Yeah. Fortunately, we are all here not to miss it for this next stretch of a kalpa of a session.
Well, I feel that too, that it's romanticized. What about the filthy bath?
What about what?
The filthy bath.
Yeah.
The disease bath, the bath with the parasites and the shit and the rotting bodies and, you know, what about that bath?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's our world too.
Yeah.
And there's danger. And there's some baths you don't get in, right?
There's some what?
Some baths that you just don't get in.
Thank you.
Or drink from.
I'm glad you spoke of that, because that reminded me of something that meandered through my bath today.
Okay.
And it's right along those lines, and I think especially someone like you, who's done home health care.
Uh-huh.
You know, when we think about anything from having a baby and, oh, I've got to change the diaper. You know, when we think about it. Or we think about caring for the elderly, you know. I have to care for my elderly parent. I don't really want to see them in that state and have to do that kind of thing. Sorry, mosquitoes. Welcome to the bath, mosquito. or in between, if we want to look at as three stages of life, but a big in between of when danger comes, when there's something that's needed. You know, when we think about if that happens, I don't know what I do. But again and again, we see when it shows up, we have this, we dive in. Pun intended? No pun intended, I don't know, but we dive in. You know, when the help is needed, we're extending a hand. When there's been an explosion, they show the people running towards it instinctively. So it's interesting, yeah, the romanticized version kind of excludes and wants to make it all pretty, but it's not pretty. But fortunately, in its unprettiness, we still show up despite ourselves. Yeah? So thanks for bringing that in, because that I was feeling that strongly today, and it slipped out of the bath. Slipped on the soap. Was there more you wanted to say? Or, you know, you've been in that field, and others have too, but...
We all got parasites in the Amazon.
Yeah.
You know? And we got rid of them too. But not everybody does. Sometimes they go into the brain, you know? And, you know, and I guess I'm asking about discrimination. And... When do we do that? I guess we call ourselves bodhisattvas, and we have the intention of bodhicitta. And what about when there's danger? You know, that discriminating wisdom. That maybe that's not what the koans say.
Well, I think, you know, looking at, concerning the Bodhisattva vows, our precepts, the Bodhisattva vows, and two things tend to come up related to them. The main one that you probably heard me and others say before, but what I think they're really about is they're not about keeping those rules and not about following that path. It's about the ability not to turn away from it. That's why we practice those vows as bodhisattvas, to develop the ability to be with what is and not turn away, to welcome it. And then, the awareness of, to put it in Buddhist terminology, the karma we may take on by doing what we must do. If it's considered violating a precept, we go into it eyes ablaze, knowing and willingly risking taking on the parasites, because what is needed is bigger than my concern of the parasite or whatever karma I may build up. And I'm willing to bear what I must bear in order to offer what I must offer. Yeah.
How about there are moments then you honor yourself, saying, no, it's too dangerous for me to do it. I'm not going to do it.
I'm willing to take on that karma as well. Because that I still can't, even when I refuse and I can't, I try to turn away, I can't turn away. It's that snake caught in the bamboo tube. You're in so far, you can't get out. You can shut your eyes, live there forever stuck in it, or keep moving through it, but you're still, you're in the tube.
So that reminds me of what Megan said last night about the bamboo rod filled with gold.
Yeah.
And wherever you cut it, there's gold.
Oh, nice.
And so it would all be that gold.
Yeah.
We think of gold, but as is gold. Never forget that.
everything shape shifts. It just depends on how the light hits it and where the light. To be able to see things and hear one way and hear someone else see it another is enlightening. Just that. You can make magic out of anything. I took care of my mom, and when she was, you know, until she died, and I was able, it seemed like every time I was there was when she was incontinent. And I'm a nurse, I've been doing that work for a million years, but to be able to clean my mother and make sure she was safe and massage the tissue and make sure the circulation was good and was such an amazing gift. And my brother would look at me like, you are really seriously off your rocker, you know. But it was such a gift. It just depends on what you see. And, you know, we can just keep spinning the prism and see things differently in lots of different ways. Depends on what brightness is in the sky or what clouds are in the sky. It's immense.
Yeah. The sky agrees with you. Anybody else have something they want to splash around before we wrap up and soak some more? All right. Thank you.